Track 11. There'll be two feature items today. Today's first feature is another item from TNF Soundings. Just how much do we really know about Robin Hood? And how much is based on actual fact? Was he a real person or merely a myth who has grown into a legend? You'll no doubt recognise the voice of Colin, who takes a humorous but well-researched look at some of the evidence. The item lasts for about 10 minutes.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Colin. That was close. Robin Hood is without doubt one of the most iconic figures of British popular culture. But the man at the heart of the legend is impossible to nail down. The popular image of Robin is that he was a devoted supporter of King Richard I, who was, it's said, so keen to meet such a loyal, if roguish, subject, disguised himself as a merchant and rode through Sherwood Forest in an effort to draw Robin out. Let's think about that for a moment. Richard I was born and bred in France and couldn't speak a word of English. Throughout his entire reign, he spent less than 5 months in England, so a meeting of any kind would have been highly unlikely. And to complicate the issue, the first mention of Robin Hood the Outlaw appears in Piers Plowman, an allegorical narrative penned by William Langland in the late 1370s. King Richard died in 1190, in France. The majority of the Robin Hood ballads were first committed to parchment in the 1450s and mention a king called Edward. Who was the king of England at that time? Henry VI. For some reason, the general public's deep-seated admiration for criminals of a certain type, Ronnie and Reggie Cray were very good to their mum, remember, people like to think of Robin as the man who robbed the rich to give to the poor. In the various ballads about Mr. Hood, there's only one reference of such charitable beneficence. We don't know exactly what that was, but it forms the lone foundation for the notion that this was Robin's standard M.O. In fact, according to those ballads, neither Robin Hood nor Little John and the rest of the so-called merry men were the kind of people anyone would fancy bumping into on a dark night. In Robin Hood and the Monk, first published in 1450, Robin is recognised by one of his clerical victims when he ventures into Nottingham. The hue and cry raised by the monk results in Robin being arrested by the sheriff's men. When they learn of this, Little John and Much the Miller's son waylay the monk and hack him to death. As for Robin himself, on many occasions he's noted in early references to have mutilated his victims and captives by cutting off their noses and or their ears. And, on one occasion, when he waylaid a party which included a juggler, the man annoyed him so much that Robin nailed him to a tree by his hands and left him to die. Well, I'm not particularly keen on jugglers, but I have to say that I think that was something of an overreaction on the part of Robin. The original Robin Hood was a man of medieval times, and his adventures were written for an audience who listened to accounts of his bloody deeds with amused admiration. Unsuited to the more delicate tastes of later centuries, all such references to Robin were swept under the carpet to remain equally obscure today. It's in fact the Robin of the 16th and 17th centuries, who evolved into the Robin of modern cinema. But could there have been a real man at the core of these legends? Throughout the growing tourist industry of the Victorian era, Yorkshire was apparently unconcerned by Nottingham making the connection between Robin Hood and Sherwood Forest. Yorkshire had the dales and the attraction of the spas of Harrogate to keep its tills ringing. Only in more recent times, with over 500,000 people a year visiting Nottingham to tour Sherwood, has Yorkshire started the battle to reclaim its native son. And if there was a real person at the core of the legend, then there's quite a bit to suggest that he came from the northern county rather than Nottinghamshire. Just 5 miles to the south of Whitby lies the picturesque fishing village of Robin Hood's Bay, known as such since the early 14th century. The earliest reference to anyone called Robin Hood appears in the records of the legal proceedings of the York Assizes, dated 1225, which details the confiscation of property to the value of 32 shillings and 6 pence, from a person variously referred to as Robin Hood, or Hod, to recover debts owed to the estates of the Church of St. Peter, prior to his being banished as an outlaw. According to modern historians, the more likely son of York at the core of the legend would have been Roger Godbird, an outlaw known to have been active in Sherwood in the late 1260s. With the Great North Way that connected London and York running straight through Sherwood Forest, which incidentally wasn't an endless woodland but open rough country, forest in those times denoted a royal hunting ground, this well-travelled route was a magnet for the likes of Godbird. Just like the legend of Robin Hood, he led a gang of thugs who variously robbed and murdered travellers and churchmen in Sherwood, poached the king's deer, and was once captured by the Sheriff of Nottingham, only to later escape. Although it seems to make sense for forest-dwelling bandits to wear green clothing, and over the centuries there have been numerous references to Robin wearing clothes cut from a cloth known as Lincoln Green. In the 1938 film The Adventures of Robin Hood, Errol Flynn wore a snazzy tailored outfit which looked like it was made in Savile Row. The description Lincoln Green is, in fact, a misunderstanding, based on some very confusing terminology. Although the city of Lincoln did become famous for a green cloth, there's no reference to Lincoln Green before 1510, which is a bit late for Robin to have been wearing it. The cloth for which Lincoln was famous in Robin's time was a bright red weave called Lincoln Grain, spelled G-R-E-Y-N-E. A name built on the fact that grains, or grains, of red dye, later called carmine, were used to achieve a scarlet hue. Old references to Robin wearing Lincoln Grain were misunderstood by later readers, who by then, aware of the popularity of the early 16th century Lincoln Green, presumed grain to be an archaic form of green. At the time, people were more at ease with the death of their heroes. So, when it came time for Robin to take his leave, these original ballads have described him travelling in diminished health to seek sanctuary with a prioress. This prioress, as it turns out, for reasons best known to herself, gives him a slow poison to accelerate his death. Keeping him company to the end, Little John hands Robin his trusty longbow. How he had the strength to draw the bow, we are not told, in order that our hero can fire a last arrow. With his dying breath, he implores John to bury him wherever the arrow falls. Now, if at this point you're expecting me to stoop to that old joke which ends with the punchline, "So that's why Robin was buried on top of the wardrobe," I'm afraid you're out of luck. In the play The Downfall of Robert, Earl of Huntingdon, the prioress is from Kirklees. And today, if you visit the grounds of Kirklees Priory, you'll find a dedicated grave. But before you get too excited, Kirklees lies in West Yorkshire, not Nottinghamshire. Many of the early ballads state that Robin Hood was driven into outlawry after his support for the abortive rebellion of 1263, led against Henry III by Simon de Montfort. Roger Godbird is known to have been such a supporter, before having to take to the hills himself. The legendary Robin is closely associated with Loxley in South Yorkshire. He's even referred to as Robin of Loxley. And Godbird is buried in Loxley, Warwickshire. which could be a further confused connection. The smart money has to be on Godbird. But with Yorkshire considering its next move, the Nottingham-Sherwood bandwagon rolls on regardless. Time for me to leave, I think.
TNF Soundings.